Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get it going here on Dime Conversations, being brought to you here and live on the Place to Be Nation podcast network. If you didn't know by now, my name is Ian, and every single week we sit down and we have a discussion about the game of baseball, the wonderful world of baseball, and we're getting to look at it now again, a different point of view as we welcome in today's guest, the talented right-handed pitcher in the Tampa Bay Rays organization, Mr. Simon Rosenblum Larson, joining the program today. Simon, how's everything in your neck of the woods?
Things are going. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, our pleasure. It's great to be joined here by you, and also in the producing chair behind the glass, as we like to say, is Mr. Doug Barclay on the program as well. But for you, man, we got to talk. What's going on in your world? Obviously, the minor leagues is on pause right now. You guys are kind of sitting there and waiting for your next instructions from the organization. But how are you holding up during all this craziness?
I'm holding up okay. I've been able to keep busy. Training some nonprofit work. I'm right now up north with my aunt and uncle at the cabin up north in Wisconsin. We're finding ways to make it work. Stayed in shape fairly well, but we're stuck inside while all the other kids are outside playing. We're watching the big leaguers start their season, and some of the guys that we know really well are on that 60-man crew that are down there, and jealousy is probably the right word. Envy. We all want to be out there playing, but there's only a certain number of spots, and sometimes you just don't make the cut at this point. So definitely, just trying to make do the best we can.
Yeah, I can't imagine, what you're going to go through with a lag of actual in-game time. But how you keep warm with the arm? You have to do a certain number of throws per week. Like, what's your regimen like?
Yeah, I mean, I my throwing partner is a fence. Good throwing partner. They never make any bad throws. They don't really throw it back very well. But you just sort of learn how to get stuff done. You lift. I lift in the mornings usually. I'll get some running in, get some throwing in. Because I'm up in the cabin, other stuff gets done that's physical activity, chopping wood, things like that. But I grew up in cold weather, so you learn how to throw baseballs at a wall or at a fence or things like that. You learn how to sort of train when you don't have the perfect situation to train in. It's just sort of par for the course for my own career so far, but the lack of in-game situations and in-game, like the pressure or the opportunity to perform in front of fans and to make, some kids' day, like I miss that. And I think every baseball player does. So
that's awesome to hear you say that. Cause we were talking before we got rolling here, the minor league experience now is not just the game. It's everything going in and around it. And you really could make an impression on a 10-year-old kid who's sitting there watching warmups and watching guys throw on the side, because when you're in that environment, you're so right on top of the game that you feel like you're invested in it. And for that to be gone and for you to just be getting onto the journey, I feel for you, because that minor league life is something else, and you've been to some interesting places already. Yeah. But there's so much more that you've got ahead of you that it sucks that the brakes were put on for the 2020 season. Sorry to keep saying it.
Obviously, there's nothing I can do about it, but those relationships are really meaningful from a player side as well. It sort of makes what you're doing, it puts it into a really, really positive light when you can see a kid that. He's watching you. He's come to multiple games maybe. And he you talk to him after one game, and then a couple games later, he's back and he wants to say, hey, or he brought a ball this time to get signed or something. Those are really meaningful moments for every ball player. And I think at the minor league level in particular, it happens more than I think at the major league level, just because of the number, there's not as many fans in the stadium and players are a little more accessible.
And you can't forget some of those theme nights. Come on, you're missing some sweet jerseys. Avengers theme the Minions theme. I mean, there's so many cool movies that came out this summer that you could have been wearing a jersey of on top of it.
I know.
So what was the spring like, you know, as you, before all, everything was shut down, where were you at in terms of, you know, what you were being told, where you might've been headed, like where were they, you kind of at in the process with the Rays?
You never really know. I played the full season last year at High A in the Florida State League, went to the Arizona Fall League. So I think I had put myself in a position to break camp with the Double A team, would have been in Montgomery, Alabama. Camp was, I mean, I threw one live inning against an opposing team, seeing somebody in another jersey. We put an inner squad against the Braves. The day camp was shut down, I was getting ready to get on a bus to go to JetBlue and pitch, well, sit in the bullpen at least with the big league club against the Red Sox. As a backup, I probably wouldn't have pitched, but it would have still been pretty cool. Didn't get to do that, but, you know, down the road, let's hope. Double A was out of the gate was my goal. And then obviously from there, you just continue working and keep grinding your way up the ladder.
Now, Simon, looking at your numbers, you had a pretty good outing in the Arizona Fall League last year. Can you talk a little bit about that experience? You know, you were on a team with some of the top prospects in the game, Royce Lewis, Victor Mesa. What was that like?
It was a lot of fun. Definitely the competition level is a little – so there's a lot of age difference in the league. There's guys who are, you know, 25 and about to make their big league debut. There's guys who are 19, Royce Lewis, who are number one draft picks and have a crazy amount of talent, but, you know, maybe still have some ironing around the edges to do. And for me, it was a great experience just, you know, being able to pitch against that kind of talent. And it was a little bit of a learning curve at the outset, because it was one of those things where you go into it, it's a little hyped up. You start sort of thinking about pitching around guys or something like that. And for me as a pitcher, that has always hurt me at every level. If I start pitching around guys, I'll end up beating myself, because, you know, if you go right at guys and you be aggressive, and personally, like, my stuff is good enough where that's never been an issue for me. If I can get back to that mindset, I felt really comfortable at the end of the Arizona Fall League going right after hitters, you know, pounding the zone, making them make the move rather than, you know, me sort of pitching around guys. And so it was a good opportunity. It was a good learning experience. Really cool to see a player like Royce Lewis. I think he won the league MVP. He was, you know, unbelievable athlete, really great kid. You know, other players have a huge amount of talent in that league. My teammate from High A, Vidal Brujan, had a great year there. Ronaldo Hernandez, couple other guys, Geraldo Perdomo from the Diamondbacks was awesome. Seth Beer from their organization as well. Roberto Ramos was on our team there, and now he has 15 home runs in Korea right now. But the talent level was really, really good. We won the championship there too, which is always a plus. It was an awesome experience.
And now if the world complies and the 60-game season goes well and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, it looks like they wanted to expand the Fall League for this coming year. What do you know about that? What do you think? Interest level sky high? I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, look, I would love to play. I've been sort of considering, you know, whether I would end up with an independent league team or something like that. Cause you know, they've opened minor leaguers. We can go play anywhere right now.
Yeah.
I would love to play somewhere, whether it's, down in Florida with the Rays Instructional League of some kind, or, you know, they've talked about doing something internally. We've talked about expanding the Fall League. So, you know, I haven't heard anything specifically about it, but, you know, it seems like an awesome, awesome opportunity for guys.
So where do you think, you might end up with all this? You think it's just going to be, this season is kind of like kind of on the wash side of it? Are you optimistic for something? You know, I know it's too far into it. We don't even know what's going to happen in 2 weeks with regular ball.
Yeah, the Rays have said they don't want to waste this year as a development year. Obviously, as an organization, they're pretty committed to farm system development. So they've sort of their message to us has been, you're gonna develop with us at some point. There'll be opportunities for you to work with coaches, whether it be remotely or in person. But I'm pretty certain that there'll be some sort of instructional league. But again, Florida is deciding not to take this virus seriously at all. And so they're seeing, you know, record numbers of cases every day. And right now it would not be smart for us to go down there and start something. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's crazy too. And when camps were closed, you know, it was kind of vague as to what was even going to happen with the season. And it's like we went on from that, like we were thinking, oh, it's going to be June and minor leagues will get a little bit of time. And then it's going to be like, well, at the end of June, minor leagues won't get that much time. And then when they just put the knife and the dagger into the, you know, the neck of the minor league baseball season, just huge blow. And, you know, I don't want to keep on hampering. Let's talk about some positive stuff.
You know, the work that we're doing, I'm involved with an organization called More Than Baseball. I'm a co-founder of it. You know, we've seen firsthand a lot of the impact that this has had on players. I mean, a lot of guys rely on the season for some sort of stability in their life. You know, they have a place to play. They have a place to, you know, work to, you know, support their families back home and things like that. And so teams have provided some financial support. Most teams were providing $400 a week stipends. But players sort of rely on like the two meals a day they get at the complex. They rely on sort of the day in, day out schedule, the opportunity to save money on rent by living with teammates and things like that. I mean, this is hitting a lot of players really hard. And I want to underscore that because, you know, whether I'm doing all right, I have, you know, family support network, an opportunity to train, you know, places to, you know, go and relax and spend time doing other things. A lot of guys don't have that. I would say, right, you know, a huge number of guys don't have that.
And that's tough because that could impact a career. Exactly. It's just like the kid in high school who got robbed of potentially, you know, the end of last year and in this year. It could take people off certain tracks that they're on. So putting this together, how did that organization come about and your role in it? How did you, you know, kind of foster it and make it what it is? Because, I mean, following it, you guys are doing an amazing job.
We all got together in, I guess it was July of 2018. So it was about a month after I was drafted, a month and a half after I was drafted. And, one of the co-founders, Jeremy Wolf, and Slade Heathcott, who is a former big leaguer who was actually in the process of, retiring at that time. We sort of got together, Jeremy and Slade had been talking about starting something. I got in touch with them and we sort of put our brains together and thought about, you know, how we could fit in the baseball space and be a force for good. Personally, you know, I'd heard stories about the minor leagues, but I don't think you really get it until you're there, until you sort of see the fact that you're, you know, I mean, your weekly paycheck is $350 in short season. Like,
right.
It's, it's hard to sort of describe what it's like to be, seeing guys sending home, you know, half their paycheck every month and then, you know, missing breakfast or missing dinner or, you know, being afraid to break a bat, right? The guys aren't being provided, you know, high quality equipment. So they're afraid to swing at an inside pitch. Like that's affecting their performance. And so you see a struggle that, you know, you can think about, you can theorize about, but you don't really get it until you see it firsthand. And when I saw it firsthand and when obviously Jeremy and Slade had been through it as well, those two guys are a little older than me. It hits home and it's something that like, there's not really a support network available to minor league players. And so we wanted to create something that, that resembled that.
Yet another thing that there really wasn't a light shed on. Not many people realized the minor league. Yes, it's on. Not everybody has that signing bonus. Not everybody has that, you know, lap of luxury that's exactly afforded to them. You know, I remember back being around minor league locker rooms and seeing, you know, spreads of food and there's this and there's jerseys and it all looks so nice, but you don't know what the individual was going through and whether or not this has been a blessing in disguise. It's brought awareness to the fact that not everybody has these luxuries afforded to them. Again, that's why I commend what you guys are doing.
No, we hear it all the time, right? Like, why are you guys helping out guys who are professional athletes? And it's like, look, just because somebody's a professional athlete doesn't mean they make $1 million. Most minor league players make less than $10,000 a year. That's year. That's annual income.
Right.
So you're talking about you're below the poverty line in every state in the entire country. You are below the poverty line. And you don't even get above the poverty line until you're double A or triple A, right? You get pay raises at those levels. But if you're in short season, you're making $3,200 a year. You don't get paid for instruct. You don't get paid for spring training. You don't get paid for extended spring training if you're going to, you know, short season ball or something like that. Your annual income is less than $4,000. And so when you're talking about like a guy trying to make it, you know, without family support, they may not have a place to go home to. If you're trying to pay rent, you got to get two or three off-season jobs. You've got to, you know, take your training time and spend it doing other things to try and survive, right? Like, that's not the best environment to become the best athlete you could possibly be. And so at More Than Baseball, we're really trying to help, you know, minor league systems develop to the position to develop players to their maximum capacity, right? Like, we're not looking at this from a, you know, it obviously there's other issues involved here, but like the most obvious one is it's a player development issue. You can't develop high quality major league players if your guys are working three jobs in the offseason and only able to train for 30 minutes or an hour a day. So that's sort of the lens that we try to frame it from. And I think, you know, that's been, people around the baseball community understand that. I mean, it makes a lot of logical sense. So
how much do the success stories mean to the people you have been able to help and to the people that have had some sort of a, you know, impact on the mission being moved forward? Like, how's that impacted you?
It's always a good feeling seeing a guy, you know, hey, you know, my uncle has cancer and I've been paying for his treatments. Like, this help that you guys are providing me is going to help us do that. Like, that is sort of, I mean, that's why we do it. Because, you know, ball players are people, ball players have families, ball players have lives. They're not just there to, like, you know, get on a field and throw baseballs really hard or hit balls really far. Like, these guys have lives and they're pillars in their community. And so, giving them the opportunity to keep themselves afloat, I think it's good for the game as a whole. It helps these players develop. It helps, you know, communities that thrive around baseball, develop. It helps, you know, minor league baseball looks a lot better if the players are happy and healthy and, you know, doing well. And so does major league baseball. So, it's a powerful thing when you're able to, you know, provide a leg up to somebody who's really in a situation of need. And, you know, I will plug again, like, we're continuing to run these programs. And so if any listeners want to get involved or are interested, they can check out our website. It's www.morethanbaseball.org. We're on social media and stuff like that. So, you know, we're always helping. We're always looking for different ways to help. And so, you know, you name it, we do it. That's sort of our motto.
What did you think of that first bus ride in the minors? You know, you hear the stories, you go back, you know, 50 years, you hear the same stories that a guy could tell you from last season. What was that like, the first, you know, bus ride from one town A to town B?
Well, there's a difference between the first bus ride, which is usually, you know, when I was in short season, our first bus ride was only about 5 hours, which is short by minor league standards. I was to Aberdeen, Maryland from Hudson Valley, New York. Was not an overnight trip. So not so bad. But the bus rides, the one that I remember most vividly was our first overnight trip. So it was pretty cold on the bus. There was a lot of AC. For the first month of the season, our AC had been broken. So this was the first time we had a cold air conditioning bus, and it was freezing. And, you know, I'm trying to sleep in the seat and I can't really fall asleep, and it's crowded. You're two to, you know, a coach bus seat. So I end up sleeping on the floor. And I found a spot on the floor that was above the engine. So it was a really warm spot on the floor. I had a hoodie at the time, and I rolled it up and used it as a pillow. And one of our coaches at that level, he was like, look, it's our first overnight road trip. We're going to, like, celebrate. We'd had a good start to the season. I think we had just won, you know, a series. I think we'd swept a series back home. So we were sort of, you know, excited on the bus, and he's doing karaoke. And, you know, I mean, he's bringing guys from all over the bus, and it's, you know, 1:32 in the morning. We're all trying to sleep, and our coach is still up there, like, singing karaoke and doing all this wacky stuff. And so I will never forget that. I mean, it was one of those moments where, like, I'm lying on the floor of the bus. I got a hoodie under my neck. I've got an arm over my face trying to get the block the light out. And there's our coach is screaming on the microphone of the bus while I'm trying to sleep. It was one of those things that, you don't know it until you've done it, you know?
Yeah. One of many, I'm sure. That is just the first on the road to many.
First overnight bus ride that I ever had in minor league ball. So.
Yeah. And that'll stand out forever, but I'm sure there's going to be quite the more karaoke sessions as you progress on your journey.
I've seen 6 or 7 already, and I've only played 2 full, 1.5 full seasons. So.
No, that's I love that. That's great. But then I kind of talk about, we go back to playing in college and that transition from college ball to, you know, full on professional minor league ball. What do you kind of feel about the competition factor? You know, now, whereas you're playing in college, this is now you're in your career now and you're kind of moving on. How was that transition for you and the difference between?
Well, I mean, they're nothing alike. College ball, obviously you have we played maybe one game during the week. I was a starter. So I sort of knew my schedule. Getting to pro ball, I'm a bullpen guy, first of all. So everything, you know, you just throw it all the wind. You don't really know exactly when you're going to pitch. You're also playing every day, which you don't do in college, obviously. Right. So grueling, definitely. More fun, I think, in pro ball, a lot more fun in pro ball than in college. Cause you know, college, there's pressure. There's, you know, all these like outside things that like you're, you know, your coach is so into winning and not super into development, depending on where you play. Obviously I, you know, I credit my coaches with a lot of my development work in the off season, but when you get to the season, like you're not working to get better, you're working to win games. In minor league ball, it's a mix of both, right? You play to win and you play to win every single night, but you're there to get better and you're there to like, you know, whatever skills that you're working on at that time, you're working on developing them during the season. And so I would say like definitely a looser atmosphere in pro ball. Obviously the talent is a lot better. That's really fun as a guy who loves competing, getting a chance to play against, you know, guys whose names you see as first round picks or as prospect lists or whatever, like getting a chance to beat those guys, and to, you know, beat them with your best stuff is always really fun for me. You know, I love pro ball. I can't say enough. You know, it's been such a good experience for me, and I miss the heck out of it. So,
well, we can't discount the Harvard Crimson baseball. I mean, you know, it's a quite the rich history. You know, and it's a very competitive market to play in college, which is just, it's always funny. So for me, I never really connected to college baseball because I kind of waited until you came over, and then I started following from the bottom, but. It's got a very, very diehard base of people who live and die for college baseball. But like, what did you see about, you know, college baseball life and how those game, the preparation was? Like, kind of give us a look, if you can, into the mindset of you as a player.
Sure. I mean, for me as a ball player in college, it was like, when I got there, I was totally not prepared for it. I was from Wisconsin. I, you know, played high school baseball here and, did not face very good competition, but sort of my own mindset, it was a sort of a culture shock the first year. Baseball obviously is taken really seriously in college. You know, it's a good place to develop. It's a great opportunity for you to, you know, especially going to a lower tier baseball school is a good opportunity for me to fail and to have the opportunity to fail. And then to improve upon my failure and, you know, become the player I am today. But really the mentality is first and foremost, it's team camaraderie. I mean, you're with these guys all the time and there's no movement, right? In minor league ball, you get called up, sent down, all that kind of stuff. Like college ball, it's, you got one team and you guys are rolling with it. And you spend so much time together, you get to know these guys really well. They're, you know, day in, day out, they're the guys you talk to, they're the guys you, you know, you confide in. And so that team chemistry is something that's unique to college ball, I think. And I also, I mean, the competition side of it, like you don't play that many games in college ball. And so every game right. matters a lot. So I would say there's actually a lot more pressure in college baseball than in pro ball. Obviously in pro ball, it's your job. You're being evaluated at every turn, but you get to, I mean, you're playing a full season, right? You're playing 150 something games last year with the fall league. Like when you play, I mean, we only played 41 games in college seasons. Most teams play 60, but every game matters a lot in college ball. So that transition was, I mean, it was definitely a change, but I think, you know, there's a lot to say on behalf of college ball as developing as a place for development and as a place for sort of learning how to pitch under pressure and perform under pressure.
What's something that you learned just straight out of the gate that you just didn't anticipate even having to know in terms of playing at that level?
In college or pro ball?
In college.
In college ball, I mean, it was just like dudes can hit breaking balls in college, right? Like you come out of high school, like if I throw a breaking ball in the strike zone, nobody's got a chance, right? Like, I'm throwing fastballs by guys in high school. I'm throwing breaking balls. You know, nobody has a chance if I'm locating it well. So you get to college and you throw a, you know, an OO breaking ball. A guy hits a double off the wall. It's like, what in the world is this? So that was definitely a learning experience. The other thing is, you know, pitch selection and pitch location. You got to learn how to pitch well in college. I think, you know, that's a development step that, you know, you see younger guys in the minor leagues and they may have, you know, all the stuff in the world, but as you work your way up, like, you're going to get smoked if you can't sequence your pitches, if you can't locate your, you know, your off speed stuff. So that's something that I think I learned in college, and it's carried over in pro ball as well. But it was definitely one of those things where it was, you learn it pretty quickly once you, you know, guys are peppering balls off the wall and hitting line drives right past your ears and stuff. So
you're like, I got one for you here. And then, you're like, wow, exactly. Where did that one go?
Yeah. I mean, my sophomore year of college, I was starting a weekend series at University of South Florida, and their leadoff hitter, Kevin Merrill, went in the first round that year. And first at bat, I throw him, I think I go like first pitch fastball for a strike, breaking ball down, and throw another breaking ball for a strike. And he hits it 110 right past my head. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be a long day. So
need a bigger glove. That's it. You gotta get the glove up quick, deflect it, maybe in the third baseman.
To get the heck out of the way, but you know.
There you go. And then just finally, before we get into the wrap here, talk about the draft. Now, because to me, the draft is the most fascinating thing on the planet, because whether or not, you know, or you're being recruited, or you're being scouted, you don't know. So talk about the draft and the feelings that go through as you're waiting for your call.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'll say that with the way the draft shrunk this year, this had been my year in college, like, I wouldn't have gotten drafted, and I probably wouldn't have gotten drafted next year either. Because, you know, they're only doing possibly 20 rounds next year, and there's a stacked draft, obviously. So, I was a 19th round pick. I had no idea it was coming. I talked to maybe three or four teams before the draft. So it was like, you know, if it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, sounds good. I'll just, you know, get back to work and try to get drafted my senior year. But, my dad was living in New York City at the time. He was in a studio flat in Brooklyn. So I was sleeping on his floor. And I was that day, I had gone out to lunch with my aunt and uncle, just sort of hoping. It was day three of the draft, obviously nothing in day one and two. And I had, you know, if there was a team that was going to pick me up, it was probably going to be like the Indians or the Rockies. Those are teams that had been talking to me. And I get a text from a friend, it's like all caps, like, congratulations. And I hadn't gotten a call yet. I hadn't been following. I hadn't been anything. I was like, all right, well, maybe something happened, but I'm not going to count my blessings yet. But my phone rings right away. And at that point it was like, you sort of black out and you sort of try to swallow the moment, as it's happening. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it was the best day of my life. It had been a dream since I was a kid. And obviously, you know, I wasn't one of those guys that thought he was going to get drafted or knew he was going to get drafted or whatever. But, to get that phone call was unbelievable. I got up from lunch I said, you know, thank you for lunch to my aunt and uncle, and I gave him a hug, whatever. And I just went for a walk in Central Park. I needed a minute to sort of process what was going on, sort of understand what the heck was happening. And then actually about 2 hours later, I had to go work out. So draft day was, I went out to lunch, went for a walk, tried to process it, worked out, and then, you know, had a draft party that night with my dad and some family there. But we actually went to Foley's in New York City, which is closed.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That's a little piece of my heart that's gone. But
if anything during this craziness, like, that was another, like, dagger that Foley's is gone.
That night was, obviously, you know, I was on cloud nine, nothing could have brought me down, but I think, you know, that brings Foley's into a whole nother light for me is, you know, that moment and what it meant for me and for my dad and, you know, what I'd worked so hard for and what he'd sort of pushed me from a young age to get good at. So.
I love the draft stories, man. I mean, they're so cool. Everybody's is different. And that's why, again, I have to ask it. And you get something for sleeping on those floors, though. That's two stories we had where you're sleeping on a floor.
You get used to it. You get used to it. So.
Well, there you go. So, all right, we're going to get into the wrap up right here. But before we do, I just want to have you talk again about More Than Baseball. Yeah. You know, to give us a little bit more, if you can, about the initiative, you know, your role, what you're doing, and how people can get in touch and help where possible.
Yeah, quick breakdown. We're running a player grant program right now. We've, you know, given out almost $500,000 in financial assistance to ball players. We do a need-based application, so it's guys who really need it that are getting this help. We've paid out grants to over 1,000 ball players all over the league. We're also running some jobs training programs, opportunities for guys to get internships in fields that they're interested. Some mental health programming for guys. Obviously, this is a stressful time for everybody, and for ball players especially, sort of losing the opportunity to do what they love. So, you know, we're working really hard to provide a comprehensive system of support for ball players, and, you know, obviously anything helps, if there's folks out there that want to donate, that want to, you know, help out in some other way. Again, our website's www.morethanbaseball.org, MTB_ORG on Twitter and Instagram. Shoot us a follow, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you, and, you know, we're here to, you know, we're here to make minor league baseball and to make baseball in general a better place. So, doing what we can.
Awesome. Yeah. And if they want to get in touch with you, you got any personal, you know, follow the career, the path, if you will.
Yeah. My Instagram is at S Rosenblum Larson. They can follow up there. Obviously, you know, Twitter, you know, I use all that stuff. They can find me by just Googling my name or something. I don't think there's any other Simon Rosenblum Larsons out there. So, you know, if anybody's interested, absolutely. But you know, I don't know if my career is worth following right now, because I'm just, you know, training and doing nothing. But
hey, we get in on the ground floor on Diamond Conversations. We get in on the ground floor and we grow with you. So then we can say we knew you when. But now, Simon, appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. If you want to follow more for the show, it's at Diamond Convo. If you want to follow me, it's at Chad EMB. And for the producer extraordinaire, Sir Doug Barclay, it's at Doug Barclay 17. And that's enough out of us today. We will catch you some other time. Take care.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. And we want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.